Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Good morning, you're very welcome to the programme. Today, Donald Trump looms large as Germany goes to the polls. We'll be live in Berlin. Why Gardaí are concerned about a possible steel-to-order gang operating in Munster after a spate of luxury car thefts. We'll have the latest from the Middle East, where Israel says that a body returned by Hamas is not that of hostage Shiri Bibas. Our reporter Maura Fay meets members of the Mormon faith as they plan to expand in Ireland. And garden sheds, dull speaking rights and all the big stories of the week in our Friday gathering. That's coming up a little bit later on. If you want to get in touch with us this morning, the WhatsApp number is 0870 32 32 32. You can text us on 51551 or you can email the programme today, cb@rte.ie. First though, Pascal Donoghue, Minister for Finance and Fine Gael TD for Dublin Centre. You're very welcome.
Good morning,
to
Claire.
The programme. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Where else will we start but with Donald Trump? And the question really that we're facing, and there's a lot of this in the paper this morning. Are we really going to send our Taoiseach to the White House next month to kowtow to this president who wants to clear people out of Gaza, who says the president of Ukraine is a dictator, who's now aligning with Russia? Is it right to go at all?
Yes, it is, because if there was ever a time for dialogue and engagement, if there was ever a time for trying to reach across divides, it's now. If you look at the fact that President Macron is going to be engaging directly with President Trump in the coming days regarding all the issues that you've referred to, the reality that other European leaders will be doing the same, it's absolutely appropriate and indeed necessary that our Taoiseach does that too. And he can do that in the theme of a friendship that has existed across many, many American presidencies and many Irish governments. And I believe it is a very appropriate way in which that discussion can happen.
But there's a really high risk, isn't there, as Justine McCarthy outlines, that we'll be embarrassed in the Oval Office. He'll do to Micheál Martin what he did to Narendra Modi when he mentioned import tariffs there in front of the world's press. How are we going to handle that?
Well, so I think it is nearly inevitable that many of the issues that you are discussing at the moment, from tariffs to taxation to what is happening with the various wars across the world, will be raised in some way or other. But we are very fortunate to have the Taoiseach, who as a member of the European Union and as leader of our government, has strong views and views that I share in relation to these matters, and equally fortunate that both he and the Taoiseach can communicate that in a way that is appropriate. We can continue to want to be friends with a country and engage with them for reasons of culture and history, but also have different views on important matters. But
yeah, you'll know from your role in particular with the Eurogroup that our colleagues in the EU will be watching this very closely. Senator Maloney says they'll be asking, whose side are you on here now? Do you agree with that, that we will be watched when we're in that Oval Office if that meeting happens?
So there are two things that are underway. Firstly, Europe wants to find ways of engaging at national and at an overall EU level. And secondly, when that engagement happens, there's great focus on finding out what have we learnt and what has been the outcome of that engagement. The world is changing at the moment. We are in uncharted waters in terms of what is happening from a security and economics point of view. And when you are seeing this kind of change taking place, when you see the terrain and environment that we're in change so much, you need a good compass. You need something that can steer you in the right direction. And what I'm convinced of is the best compass that is available to Ireland is our membership of the European Union. Because if we are seeing anything happen at the moment, is that size and scale matters in a way that we haven't seen for a number of decades. And therefore, countries in Europe, through their membership of the European Union, organising themselves in a collective way. Not only is it right for Ireland, but it's right from every other member state of the EU.
And how do you see the EU reacting to this shift in the axis now and President Trump cozying up to Putin and to Russia?
So I see it happening in a number of ways. And what the European Union is now recognising very clearly, And I've been in Brussels myself on Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday, chairing a meeting of finance ministers of the European Union, and then also representing Ireland and being in the European Parliament, is that our world is changing very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. And for many, many decades, when the world was facing big challenges, the big democracies in the world would come together. They would come together through meetings of the larger economies and democracies and the smaller ones in groups called the G7 and the G20. And we will come together in worlds like the organisations like the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund.
Just some breaking news that I wanted to put to you now. Sinn Féin has just announced that it's not going to attend the St. Patrick's Day events in the White House this year. There's a press conference underway at the moment, but we know that Mary Lou has said on social media that the decision was taken as a principled stance against the threat of mass expulsion of the Palestinian people from Gaza. What do you say?
Every political party can take its own decision in relation to how it wants to engage with the United States or not. I believe what is the appropriate decision for the government of Ireland is to continue to engage with President Trump and with future presidents of the United States of America.
That's a huge decision for Sinn Féin to take, because we know how important to them their links are with the United States and their supporters there.
And it's one for them to explain and defend. And as we look at the development that we want to see happen in Northern Ireland, I still believe the United States is a very important contributor and sponsor of that. And it will be up to them to reconcile wanting to see that happen with the decision they're making. And that's their call and their decision.
You're now going to have to say to the American administration, that's Sinn Féin's decision. We don't agree with it. And that's problematic in itself for you to have to say that. You're going to have to distance yourself from a decision made by a major Irish political party.
I think in truth, President Trump and any administration that's in office focuses on what the government is doing in any country that it's dealing with, as opposed to what the opposition is doing. I'm not sure the decision of an opposition party will be featuring that largely in the thinking that America is currently mm-hmm. conducting. But I go back to the core point I've made and the questions you've put to me in relation to it. If the world is changing and we have strong views in relation to that change, and if we want to try to still influence things for the better, how can you make that happen through a process of non-engagement? Mm-hmm. And if we are in a place, I'll just be very quickly in making that point, in which we're moving into a new way in which the world has been organised, in which larger countries want to be more influential, then it is through strengthening the European Union and through Ireland engaging in the European Union and with other parts of the world, is the best hope that we have of standing over our values and looking after our country.
Do you think, though, or are you concerned hearing that news this morning, that that decision by Sinn Féin could increase the risk of a backlash against Ireland from Donald Trump?
No. I believe that President Trump will be looking at what are the issues that he wants to raise with the government of Ireland. And I respect any decision that any political party makes on how they want to participate in St. Patrick's Day or deal with other issues. But if you have strong views on a matter and if you want to communicate them, and if we have both national and European interests, how can we make progress on those interests through a process of non-engagement?
Does it muddy the waters for the government?
Well, I think it obviously will have an impact on the politics around St. Patrick's Day. But if you look at the range of different issues that we have, from a security to an economic point of view, not to mention human rights and foreign policy, how can we make progress on articulating our views if we can't talk directly with countries that are involved in those key issues, as America clearly is?
Let's talk about some of the substantive issues at play. Tariffs, of course, top of the agenda, and Ireland is one of the EU countries we know that has the biggest trade surplus with the United States. I mean, you must be clearly concerned that we will be singled out by Donald Trump when he comes to making decisions, particularly on pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, but let me just connect the two important questions you've put to me. So let's say we are in an environment in which we're having to deal with the application of tariffs, and we need to talk to the United States of America about that. But we have, or Sinn Féin have decided they don't want to engage with the United States of America. How can you do both? How can you make progress on a trade issue or a foreign policy issue if you've decided you don't want to talk to the country on the other side of the table? But to deal with your important point there regarding the application of tariffs, the way in which trade has been organised is now fundamentally changing. It's changing from the approach that has been very, very beneficial for Ireland. But fortunately, we're in a position at the moment where our economy is still strong. We've 2.8 million people at work. We've public finances that are in surplus again. And we have an economy last year that grew by between 2 and 3%. So we are in a current position of strength. And what we need to do and are doing through the European Union is make the case that if tariffs are applied, it would be mutually damaging to both sides of the Atlantic, and engage to see whether there is a negotiated outcome possible that avoids that happening, which goes back to an earlier point that I made, that if you are seeking to secure a negotiated outcome, you do need to be willing to talk to the person and the country on the other side of the
table. Well, where do you think the wriggle room might be with the Americans on this? I mean, they're looking at, he has said 25% as a starting point on pharmaceuticals. We can only imagine the harm that that would do.
So this is a negotiation, and we need to move it into the place that it really is a negotiation. So commenting on air and what wriggle room could be so early in this process, I do want to be careful about. But I'll just say two things in relation to it. Firstly, the European Commissioner with responsibility for trade, Maroš Šefčovič, has been in Washington this week engaging with his counterparts. And that kind of process and dialogue is where we have to begin. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of what a non-tariff negotiation could look like, it's really clear that the United States has formed a view that the way in which global trade is being conducted, they feel, is unfair to them. And we have to recognise the fact that they genuinely hold that view. So the question, therefore, is there any way in which we can adjust how those trade flows happen and what we buy from each other that might find another way of dealing with what they perceive to be an unfairness?
And are you working on a contingency plan to help businesses that might be impacted by this? Because there will be an immediate cash flow problem. What can you do? Because aren't your hands tied to some extent because of state aid rules?
So there are state aid rules at the moment that do allow flexibility in this area. And of course, we have through the IDA and indeed Enterprise Ireland, the best organisations in the world, I believe, are looking at how we can support companies and how we can support investment into our country. But again, in that area, there's going to be a balance to strike. The single market, the way in which we sell goods and services to each other across Europe, relies on a level playing field. It relies on a single marketplace. Mm-hmm. And I do think we need to take care with changing the rules there. How would we support companies? How would we support our economy if we ended up in that position? That is the reason we have a budget surplus in the first place.
And in particular, you will be able to help companies, you're saying, who may be impacted by these tariffs?
Well, I would outline, firstly, the fact that we want to try and avoid being in a position where tariffs are applied. That's the key thing. And that's why, again, I talk about the need for negotiation and dialogue. In terms of what we will do to support our economy, rather than thinking about it company by company, it's how we will continue to invest in our economy to ensure mm-hmm. that it is competitive. Listen, what we will do with infrastructure, how we can continue to support our people as the economy changes, not just to America, but because of other changes that are happening in the global
economy.
OK,
well, you've moved us to infrastructure now, so let's go there to an issue that arose this week when your colleague John Cummins suggested this idea about log cabins in gardens not being subject to planning permission. I mean, it's a fairly sad indictment of your government's housing policy, if that's part of the solution, is it not?
So we are building more homes in our country. I mean, since we launched Rebuilding Ireland, for the first 3 years of that plan in particular, for the years of that plan, we've built over 120,000 homes and additional homes. But while I can make the case to the fact that more homes are being built at the moment, I'm keenly aware from my own constituency, not to mention across the country, how much more we need to do. And what Minister Cummins was doing, in fairness, is he wasn't saying this is the solution to the many difficulties
that we
have. No,
he wasn't. Part of the solution.
Part of the solution, absolutely.
Do you agree with it?
I think it's a good idea. But what we just need to do is examine it and look at how it could happen in an appropriate way and make sure it would happen through it can already happen through our planning system in certain ways. Just look at, do we want to make that more structured and more broadly available? And Minister Cummins has correctly said this is an idea that he wants to examine.
But you could see houses with gardens now increasing in price further, because people might see that there would be a rental income there along with the residential property already on the land.
Indeed, and any intervention you ever make in housing always has other effects. And of course, that's something that we would need to consider. But through our current planning system already, you can already make extensions. You can already extend the size of your dwelling. You can already do things within the garden.
This is different, though. You wouldn't have a family living in your kitchen extension.
Oh, no, I do accept, Claire, there would be a difference. But you can already do things through our planning system that would ultimately affect the value of your home in the years to come. And while there could be an impact on the value of the home, I think that's a fair point. Equally, if it does help families in meeting the needs of their daughters and sons and other family members, then as John has said, we should examine it properly. And I think there's merit in what he's thinking about and merit in the process that he's proposing.
And Micheál Martin talked about these hard decisions that need to be made when it comes to housing in relation to tax breaks for investors when it comes to housing. Now, James Brown has said that all options need to be on the table, the minister, but you've ruled out tax breaks. Why?
So I made my view clear in relation to this earlier on in the week, and I outlined my concern regarding how these things can operate. But this is a government that is united in trying to deal with the challenges of housing. And year after year and over many different issues, you know, we have different options and different views in relation to these different options. And we work out a good plan and we implement it, and we will do the same here. And I'll do that with Minister Brown.
But do you accept that private investment is needed to drive this on?
I've been making the case for that for many years.
So why not tax breaks then?
Well, we already have tax supports in our system. We have Help to Buy. We have the Shared Home Equity Scheme. We have the residential zoned land tax that is coming out and is already in place. So those tax interventions are in place. But if you're looking at doing anything else in relation to tax, the two points that I would make is, firstly, we need to make these decisions on budget day, because anything you talk about can always have an effect on the market. And secondly, we just need to look at what has been the history of when we have done this in the past and what the impact was. But I reiterate what I said earlier on, that while I've made my point, I'm equally committed to the fact that the government needs to make progress on this, do more and do better. And myself, the Taoiseach and Tánaiste, Minister Brown and, of course, Minister Chambers will work that out together.
But they're throwing these things out there now. And you made the point that the time to make these decisions is on budget day. Is there a sense that on issues in housing, and I suppose you could look at justice in the same way as well, that Fianna Fáil is stealing a march on you or trying to?
Oh, we couldn't have better relations in this government at the moment. I came into this studio and I campaigned on the basis not only of Fine Gael getting back into government, but doing so with Fianna Fáil. If I look at the work that Minister
Chambers... Well, now, you were tearing strips off each other during that election campaign. We all remember that.
Oh, I think you'll also remember me being in this studio with you in the final days of the campaign, making the case for what the last government achieved. And I look at the work that Minister Chambers and I have done over a year, and I believe we'll be able to do that for a number of more years, and the excellent work he's doing in the Department of Public Expenditure. And I look at the way myself, the Taoiseach, the Tánaiste and Minister Chambers have dealt with really serious and difficult issues in the past. And we will do that again. This is a government that is united. It has different political parties within it. That is the nature of a democracy. And we will work out these issues together, and we will.
But throwing something onto the table like rent pressure zones, for example, that puts the fear of God into renters who feel that their rent could go up at the drop of a hat. But you have agreed to look at that.
I think in real fairness to the Taoiseach and also to the Tánaiste on this matter, they were merely outlining that in our programme for government and in the way the rent pressure zones are set up, the issue has to be reviewed. And both the Taoiseach and Tánaiste were making reference to that. And equally, what we're all aware of is rent pressure zones have played a really important role in stabilising and giving certainty to those who rent. And what we have said we need to look at is, in the context of apartment development contracting so much across last year, what is the impact of that policy on those who want to be renters in the future? Because if we want a bigger rental sector, we will need more apartments to be built, certainly far more than we built last year. And we have to consider this policy in both lenses.
So the rent pressure zones are putting off the people who would invest and build apartments.
I think it's too early to say that at the moment. What we've said is we need to review it. And that is what the government will do. We are deeply mindful of the role that rent pressure zones have played in supporting those who are tenants, those who are in existing rental accommodation. We want to find ways in which we can still give security and protection. But we also have to look at what we can do to continue to support the delivery of more rental accommodation in the future. You asked me earlier on about the private sector and what role they can play. Myself and Minister Chambers now for some time have been making the point that the private sector has to do more. The state on its own cannot fix this. And it is through that approach we have to consider the issue of rent pressure zones.
Like last month, Ireland had the lowest number of houses available for sale on record. Then we had house price inflation doubling between 23 and 24. I mean, you've been in government since 2011. Do you admit now that your housing strategy hasn't worked?
I believe it needs to do better. Do I believe it hasn't worked? I wouldn't accept that for the reason I said earlier on. Over 120,000 homes have been built. 120,000 homes that have been built during a time in which we also had a pandemic, in which the construction sector wasn't operating. And I'm really aware of the indicators that you're referring to and the social impact of them, which I experience day after day.
And the 40,000 houses that you said we'd get and we didn't get last year.
And there have been other years in which we have exceeded our annual housing target. And I could put other statistics to you, which I know are true, in that if you look at the rate of housing construction output and the increase that we've had here within Ireland, it's one of the largest rates of increase in the European Union.
But this is in the week where we're talking, you know, telling people that they might be able to live without planning permission in the garden in a shed or a log cabin.
But I go back to the point that Minister Cummins made, that it is part of the ideas that we need to consider in relation to this. But the far bigger approach that we are united on delivering is how can we deliver more homes, and what does that mean for the decisions that we need to make in energy, in water, how we zone land and how planning permissions are granted. And they are all of the areas which the government is considering and aiming to make progress. And the National Development Plan review and the work in relation to how we fund it, that will be Minister Chambers will play a key role in, will deal in particular with issues in relation to energy and water.
Okay, the central bank governor, Gabriel McClough, said yesterday, he talked about the need to broaden the tax base, and he said there's a menu of options in the Commission on Tax and Welfare's report. He's concerned about the pronounced risks to Ireland because of our reliance on, over-reliance, he said, on corporation tax. Are you going to heed that warning? Is there scope there to broaden the tax base?
Well, I've heeded it in the past, and we're going to heed it again in this future. That's why the government is committed to continuing to increase carbon taxes, which is a really difficult argument to make in the context of the inflation shock that we so recently had and we all still feel in our purses and wallets. But if you want an example of how you can broaden the tax base, it is through budding up carbon taxes year after year, a difficult argument to make, and then using that money to deal with the many costs that we have with regard to climate. Likewise, in relation to the sustainability of our social insurance fund, which is how we pay for our pensions in the future, the government has agreed a roadmap in how we would change rates of PRSI in the years ahead to do it.
But you did promise during the campaign to increase the point at entry into the higher rate of tax to 54,000. Is that going to happen?
Well, we will look at making progress at that budget by budget, and the programme for government commits to the fact that we need to look at how we can continue with indexation of our tax code. But if I take a step back and like, what does indexation mean? Indexation means as your income goes up, we want to avoid you paying more tax only as a result of your income going up. And it's a very appropriate tax policy to follow if incomes are going up with an economy. But what myself and Minister Chambers and the party leaders will do is, as we move through the year, going back to all of the questions you put to me earlier on, with the world changing around us, our number one priority is keep our country safe, keep our economy safe, make the case for our values, and try to find ways in which we can to invest into our future. And all of these different individual decisions will feed into those aims.
And electricity credits, supports for people because of the cost of living crisis, they're gone, are they?
Yes, the Taoiseach and I've made this point myself before the government accepts this is an argument that we'll need to make in the year as the year goes on. You know, we have inflation now of just over around 1%. Mm-hmm. It's one of the lowest levels of inflation within the European Union. When we were bringing in these really big cost of living supports of over 2 billion euro per year, inflation was at 5%, 10% and higher than 10%. If inflation is at the level that it is, it's better that we help with the permanent measures we make year by year than by very big temporary measures. And that, I know, will be an argument that I'll need to make as we approach Budget Day. But again, if you look at the risks that are around us, we're better off using our money to deal with those risks than deal with inflation that is now not lower at the level it was.
Finally, Minister, I wanted to ask you about what's been happening in Queensland. People will remember the devastating explosion back in October of 2022. Why do you believe the families are being forced to fight against these plans now to rebuild on that site where their loved ones died or were injured?
So I heard the news during the week of the development that has gone in for planning permission there in Chrysler. And I have to say, when I heard the families react to it, it really struck a bell with me on a personal level. Because this is in the planning process, I'm limited by what I can say, but I do really understand that. Firstly, I understand that those who lost loved ones may have heard about this through the media. And secondly, I can really understand they're upset at seeing a commercial development take place on something where loved ones were lost. But Claire, I also have to be conscious that there's a planning process underway that, as a member of government, I can play a role in.
OK, Minister, we'll leave it there. Thank you for coming
Thank you, Claire.
It's Minister for Finance, Pascal Donoghue. We'll take a break back after this.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.